Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Casey.
Hey, what's up?
And Michael.
How's it going?
It's going well. So, you guys are, like, leaving for Hawaii in a couple days.
Yes, in about, 72 hours, so I'll be in Hawaii.
So, Hawaii is not an international flight, so you don't get free alcohol.
Yeah, it's very, very unlucky.
Fortunately, since the flight
so
well,
long?
I was going to say, since the flight was free, your budget for alcohol expands dramatically.
Well, so like for my flight to Canada, I got a lot of alcohol.
So can I bring alcohol onto the plane?
No,
no,
I have to get it. From I mean, you it. Can it's try.
Flammable. Only 3 ounces.
Oh, that sounds so unpowerful.
If you put it in a shampoo bottle.
Here's the thing.
What if it's Everclear?
I don't think they'll let you bring any kind of liquid. Like, maybe they will. But that seems powerful.
I mean, it's like an 11-hour
Just like bring
flight.
Like one of those. I mean, if it's
God, Everclear. You could get drunk and sober like 6 times.
I'm surprised. I would be surprised if they didn't give you international benefits on that kind of flight.
I have actual no idea. All I know is that I'm going to be over the Pacific Ocean for like 7 hours.
How's your Pokemon team coming as far as your... I know you bought a Nintendo DS specifically for this flight.
Yeah, I was getting too far into the game, so I kind of stopped playing.
Stopped so you could beat it on the plane ride?
Yeah.
God. Here I was planning to, you know, second guess all the deck choices, and Casey's like, oh man, I'm gonna become the champion at something.
Exactly. He's starting it off on a positive note.
He's gonna be the very best like no one ever was before he even lands. Alright.
Yeah.
Well, let's get right into this. So don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show, and really that's the best way to support the show. If you want to donate to the show in any capacity, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg, starting at $1 and donate any amount that you see fit. You can also just go to constructivecriticism.com. There's a donate to PayPal button there. If you don't want to donate every month and you're just looking for like a one-time donation, that's a great way to do it. And we're happy with anything. Like, the show's always going to be free for you guys, but we definitely want to give you guys an outlet to, if you think the show is great, to go ahead and give back. So, but we are going to be... on at least this podcast, dropping our sponsorship with Five Color Combo. That being said, still, Five Color Combo did launch a Kickstarter for their new Constructed app. They've gotten a lot of feedback for it and not a lot of support. But if you're able to, please go to their Kickstarter and donate. It's a $20,000 project that could use your help. And honestly, it's like a really great idea. I know that Five Color Combo does a lot to try and improve their application all the time. This new app even includes like adjusting pick orders to make sure that your drafts are a little bit more realistic. So check it out at fivecolorcombo.com and go and donate to their Kickstarter. As far as the sponsorship for this podcast, they won't be sponsoring this podcast anymore. The reason for that is just because we want to focus on our main sponsor. Oasis Games is amazing, and honestly, they do so much for this podcast. If you look at like the amount that we get out of the sponsorship, a lot of times people ask me about things like, Spencer, what cards would you buy right now? And it's like, I don't buy Magic cards. And a lot of times they're like, oh, why don't you buy Magic cards? And I don't need to. I have Oasis. So part of our Oasis sponsorship is that we get to borrow cards from the store. And them having all of the Magic cards all the time makes it so that I don't need to own Magic cards.
Yeah, I haven't owned Magic cards in a long, long time.
Basically, since the Oasis sponsorship.
Yeah, since we started this relationship. And it's a huge benefit to our competitive Magic careers, right?
Yeah, I think that if you're going to buy cards from a store, like if you're looking for cards to buy, I would check out Oasis first. You know, you get 5% off or 4% off of every order based on the code CCM. Or would that be good? Which one's which?
I think that would that be good is the...
Would that be good is the 4% and CCMTG is the 15% on your first time. And that offer especially is just incredible. I mean, for something like Magic cards where it's basically commodity pricing, I mean, like kind of everyone's prices are basically the same, getting 15% off is pretty sweet. I certainly did that when I was getting back into playing Magic. And it saved me probably like $75.
It can legitimately get you into a deck, right? Like, yeah. If you're just outside of, like, I can't afford this deck, and standard prices are really low right now, and I actually expect them to stay low throughout this standard season, where, like, you're focusing more on two-color and one-color decks, I would think that, like, standard prices are going to be relatively low, and if you want to get into standard, buy multiple standard decks with that code. Obviously, the larger your order with this code, with this CCMTG code, the bigger your discount, but Oasis also amazing shipping. Amazing prices, plus this code. Like, oh, we literally couldn't do this podcast without Oasis Games because we get to play in more events because we get free cards.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's actually really, really important to every part of what we do in Magic.
Yeah, so for that reason, like, we're probably going to be dropping some sponsorships and just focusing on, like, how important Oasis is to us. And because of that, we really hope that you would support them. As a store, it's important to support your local game store, but, like, Oasis
just, is... Just something to keep in mind if you're looking for a place online. You also get a... I know you get a... Depending, like, over time, you get a cumulative percentage.
Yeah, so that 4% discount that we give for just using the Would That Be Good discount is good for the little bit, but as you actually shop at Oasis more, you can get 7 to 10% discounts... just by shopping there more, where they give you store credit back to let you for future purchases, which is what I do now because, like, my discount, like, they give us a discount as members of the podcast, but my discount is, like, a shopper is actually bigger.
Yeah, it's extremely significant. It adds up really fast if you're placing a lot of orders. I mean, mine is also very good, even though I haven't bought Magic cards in
I would assume time. It's, like, 7%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a huge deal. So check them out, Oasis Games CCG, MTG Oasis, and OasisGamesSLC.com. They're a great place to buy Magic cards. So let's move on to the first segment of this podcast. Every week we have hashtag always improving. We talk about the things that are going to make us better at Magic, that are making us better at Magic, because we believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Michael, how have you improved at Magic this week?
I would say I've improved at Magic this week by trying to figure out a constructed deck and... just the pain you go through when you have an idea and you're like, okay, this is going to be sweet, and then you play some games with it and you end up second guessing yourself and just trying to go through the process of, like,
what if you had asked me on Tuesday, I would say all three of you, Danny and Casey, were on the same deck, and I think now you're all on different decks, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, it feels,
well, yeah,
really intense making the decision.
Sure.
Because it's not like a PPTQ or even a GP where, like, whatever, there'll be another tournament next week. Like, this feels like you've got really one shot to make the right decision.
Michael, is that how you feel?
Definitely. I mean, part of it is that you don't want to get roped into playing something that you just don't want to play, right? I mean, you don't want to feel like you played something just because someone else told you it was good and you end up not liking it or whatever. But a big part of it is you have to make a decision you're just personally comfortable with, I think. Where, like, it's easy to rely on, for smaller events, just try to play things other people have told you were good. And I wonder if this is more of a personal shortcoming than anything else, but it's hard to rely on other people's testing as much as your own, just when it comes down to it.
I actually do think that that's one of the benefits that, like, some of the bigger teams have, is despite, you know, our team is full of, honestly, like, if you look at it, a lot of guys that have made the Pro Tour.
Yeah, at this point, we're really starting to...
Yeah, it's like the majority...
Yeah.
The majority of guys have made the Pro Tour. But and the thing is, like, when you talk to somebody like LSV, he's like, some of the best Magic players I know have never gotten gold. And I think that it's hard because it's like, I need to know for myself before I make a deck choice what deck I'm playing. Whereas there's a lot of teams that are like, all right, Brad, like Brad Nelson, what am I playing at this Pro Tour? And they just play whatever he tells them.
And I think that that's like, it's pretty sweet to get to that kind of level in terms of just like your relationships with each other and kind of personal trust. But it also comes down to confidence in yourself to some extent, right? That someone can just hand you a deck, and if they say it's good, it's going to win for you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that. Whatever, yeah, I'll just pick it up and play some test games with it, and yeah, deck's great, I mean, fine, let's do it.
Yeah, I think that it is a real trust thing. I think that that's something that, Casey, you just experienced qualifying for this Pro Tour.
Yeah, I basically, in my RPTQ, I mean, I played a deck that I'd never really played before, just because from conversations with you, it felt like it was going to be in a very good position for the tournament, and it turned out to work very well.
Is that a hard decision to make, though? Like, we're really good friends, but, like, at the end of the day, like, it's pretty easy for you to blame me for your shortcomings at that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I certainly wouldn't do that, because I'm still the one that made the decision to play the deck, obviously, but it is tough to kind of put the faith in somebody like that. Be like, all right, I'm going to play this deck that you told me was good, kind of cold.
Yeah, it's hard to say, like, okay, because you told me it was good, it's good, flat, right? Like, that there's nothing else to it that's, okay, it's good.
No, I think that, like, I hope that one day this group of people will get there, but I think this Pro Tour is, like, the first Pro Tour where we have a group of guys going to the Pro Tour, and it's hard. It's like, I won a lot of games with this deck, and this deck, but I don't like any of these decks. For example, like, we've all won a lot of games with Black Red Vehicles, right? But, like, none of you want to play Black Red Vehicles at the Pro Tour.
No, right. Exactly. Even though I think the deck is perfectly fine, I think we're all on the same page that it wasn't quite there.
Well, also that it's just super level one. Like, it was the first deck that was winning in our testing. Michael, when you're talking about you improving as a player on this, how does this kind of decision-making help you improve as a player?
Honestly, more than anything, it just kind of... it's frustrating, but it also motivates a little bit, just in that, like, you know to some extent that you should just be able to sort of trust yourself and the people around you, and, like, Just wanting to improve to the point where I am either happy enough with how things are going in testing that I can just take those results at face value, or happy enough with where I am that I don't know, just it's like seeing kind of my distrust of myself almost. It makes me want to get to a point where I feel like I can trust my own gut instinct on this kind of stuff.
Casey, how have you improved Magic this week?
Just trying to take a very zen approach to deck selection and deck building, trying to be as calm and emotionless as possible in reviewing the options, and really trying to make the best decision, not an impulsive decision.
How does that happen?
Well, from making a conscious effort to really look at the facts, what something represents, if something, like, looking at things like statistics and math and the likelihood of things happening instead of just sample size, you know, what, making sure that you're going to be on the right side of, making sure that you're making educated decisions, I guess, that you're going to be on the right side of your statistical tables.
Okay. So, for me, things are obviously different. I don't have a Pro Tour I'm going to. I do have a deck that I'm in love with. I don't even know if that deck is going to be good after the Pro Tour, but I do have a deck that I love, and I did play it this week in the first standard tournament of the season for me. And the thing that I try to do is just do things right in slowing down. The deck that I am in love with is... Do you care if I say...
I do now.
I can edit that part out.
Okay.
Yeah, the deck that I'm in love with is Temur Emerge. I think that, like, it's one of the hardest decks I've ever played. It's a deck that Michael qualified for the Pro Tour with. And I think that it got a lot of great pieces. But one of the things that I've noticed, and I'm not going to really get into the tech that I'm playing, But I do find that my decision-making is very important for wins and losses. And that's a really rewarding feeling. But part of that means that you have to slow down a lot, because you have to, like, really come down to, like, why am I making this decision?
Yeah, sequencing is so important with that deck, and with decks of that style, where knowing exactly how to progress through your draw, knowing when to cast each spell, knowing, you know, which creature it's better to run out first, things like that. It's a deck where a very small mistake on turn 3 can mean that you're not ready to take over the game on turn 8.
Yeah, and that's...
Yeah, it's punishing. It's punishing, but there's also power in that, right? In that, like, you get... It's not fair to say you only get punished for bad decisions. I would say that deck often feels like you're getting rewarded for good decisions.
No, very rewarded, right? Like, I even think that in our testing, deck building decisions have been the most rewarding thing.
Yeah, that deck is a deck that where you can really, like, there, you've got some auto-includes, like, with every deck, but there's quite a bit of wiggle room.
Yeah, like, you're including some number of Emrakuls and some Elder Deep Fiends, some Vessels, some Grapples.
Right.
And that's probably the basis. But even in talking about sideboarding with Casey as, like, something that we might consider for the Pro Tour, it seems like the sideboard options are, like, you have some auto-includes, but it's, like, I need this effect. How am I going to get this effect, and which card am I going to take that does this? Because there's options at the effect that you want, but it's like, where do I maximize what I'm getting out of that effect?
Yeah, I could easily see some people playing, like, within 57 cards of each other in their main deck and playing completely different sideboards.
Yeah, and that's a huge deal, because I think that the main deck that we have is actually pretty good. But the thing is like... How does our sideboard match up against, like, what's expected at the Pro Tour?
Right, and that's what's super hard, is trying to predict it. And that's something that we've talked about, but getting on to that level of, like...
Yeah, we've talked, obviously, a lot about level 1, level 2, level 3, but it's like, oh, man, now, like, there's three of us going to the Pro Tour, like, this is something we actually need to know.
Right, and, like, what if other people aren't approaching it from the same angle? Like, they think the level 1 deck is something different.
Yeah, because our level 1 decks are, like, zombies and... Black Red Aggro, and their level 1 decks could be like Teemer Emerge and who the hell knows what else.
Right. I mean, my feeling is basically like, when you're looking at Pro Tour results, it's really easy to say after the fact when you see something that was successful and say, oh man, I had an idea that was kind of like that. But when you actually have to like register that entire deck and say, this is what I'm, you know, this is what I'm rolling with, I feel good about it, and then play it well.
Yeah,
there's just like a lot more to it than like saying, oh man, I spotted that interaction.
Completely agree. Like in this team's history, we have worked with Mono Blue Devotion and, you know, similar space where like we actually figured out the deck that won the Pro Tour and didn't register that deck as a group.
Yeah, because it was like, oh, this deck is nonsense. Right? Like, we were of the opinion that there was an upper limit to how good a Cloud Fin Raptor deck could be.
Which is true.
And we were way off base on that, because that deck was great.
Not true.
The upper level of how it could be was just higher than, you know, you anticipated, so.
No. The deck was just bad cards dot format. Or that format was bad cards dot format, and we didn't realize that.
Yeah, there were factors.
So, I think that all of this is... I think we're all in a similar space, right? Where I'm at the point where I'm not going to the Pro Tour, so I'm trying to figure out, like, all right, how do I maximize the deck that I love? And you guys are like, man, I love these decks, but, like, are these decks what I want to be playing at the Pro Tour?
Right. I basically need to try to win as many of 13 possible constructed matches over a weekend and trying to figure out what deck is going to get me there.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yep. I hope you win 13 constructed matches.
Me too.
That would be super powerful.
It'd probably only be 12 because of the way they did the brackets now.
No, if you won 13, like...
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be fine.
If you specifically won 13, you would win the Pro Tour.
Right, but, like, you can win the Pro Tour only winning 12 constructed matches.
Well,
right,
but only playing 12 constructed matches. If you win 13 constructed matches, you won the Pro Tour. So I hope you win 13 constructed matches.
Yeah, me too. I hope I win all of my constructed matches. And all of my limited matches.
That's the goal. I was going to say, you got to be careful. If you say, I hope I win all of my constructed matches, and, you know, you drop it 1-3. You know, it's...
That seems so unlikely. It's a delicate
balance. Yes, it's probably true. I guess there are only three limited rounds. You could win all your constructed matches and drop it 5-6. Oathbringing two drafts in a row would be.
Could you have the X5 to make 1,000?
Yeah. Anyway, so but the plan is to win all my matches.
Sure. All right, let's move on to Patreon participation. So everybody on the podcast, if you have something you want us to talk about, you can, if you're a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg and just leave a post, and we'd be happy to talk about it. Brought to you by Patreon, we have the card of the week. This week, we have x4 Blossoming Defense. What the heck happened?
Yeah, so this is just a great card. It's funny.
Oddly.
It's only, you know, marginally better than Ranger's Guile. It's the same effect, but, you know, just gives +2/+2 instead of +1/+1. But that's a big difference, apparently. It really changed the face of Modern Infect to be that where this cadet could really be... It was always good, but it could really be a force with this card. Have you looked at the SCG or anything, Michael?
I know that this won the took down the Classic last week. That the same guy who won the Modern Open, I think the week before, took down the Classic last week and was playing, I think, three of these in his main deck in Infect.
No, that's it. Seeing I actually it
was Brad Carpenter.
Yeah, right. And this card is just it's really good.
It wasn't legal the week before, was it?
No.
Okay. So yeah, it was the Classic that he won. Yeah, he was playing three of them.
And was he playing the fourth in his sideboard?
It doesn't look like he was. So what I'm curious about is what exactly did he replace compared to the...
It's going to be probably your Apostle's Blessings and some number of things like Twisted Image.
Okay, so he's on one Dismember, one Spell Pierce, one Twisted Image, two Distortion Strike as his sort of flex slot type stuff.
Yeah, let me take a look.
Yeah, so a lot of people before are playing like two Apostle's Blessings. And this card just seems better than that the vast majority of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Apostle's Blessing has the mode of, like, sometimes making your creature unblockable in the right matchup.
Right. But that doesn't really come up that often.
No, and this card is just so powerful at interacting.
So, were people playing four Apostle's Blessings before?
No, they were playing two, generally. Two or one, right?
So this card is so good that it's pushed a second Dismember out of the deck.
Yeah, it looks like he went down to no Apostle's Blessings, cut a Dismember.
He also only has one Spell Pierce.
Right. So it was basically you'd usually play two of one of the other. And so he cut one of those and his two Apostle's Blessings, basically.
So it's kind of a sweet, like, it's like Vines of Vastwood, except that you get mana efficiency, which... instead of having the ability to pump extra, right? So it makes for like a really good defensive spell, but it's also a good pump spell. So it's
kind of crazy, right? Because it's really +4/+4 in the deck.
Right.
Because you're playing Infect, but also it's like counter your spell, deal you 6.
Yeah, it does a lot. It's probably not a card that we'll see play outside of that deck, obviously, but it is very, very good at being exactly what that deck wants. You know, Vines of the Vastwood was very much your best card, and this is as good or better than that most of the time.
Yeah. If you want to win card of the week, all you have to be is a $3 or more patron of the show. Austin Baker, if you please shoot me a message on Facebook so we can set up your winning, you will get x4 of these. Plus, if like it's super cheap, I'll probably throw something else in. But Austin, we really appreciate you as a patron of the show. Please hit us up, and we will ship you some cards to help you fill out your Modern collection a little bit. But honestly, I'm surprised that this was only a 3 of, because I think it's better than Vines.
Yeah, I would not be surprised to see that number switch or something else hit the
desk. Yeah, I would expect like a 2 Vines, 4 of this, and then some number of Spell Pierce and Dismembers. I think that go ahead, Michael. You play this deck a lot.
Pierces. I think I'm just cutting all my spell pierces from the main deck, at least.
Okay.
Spell pierce just feels so much more likely to be a brick.
Yeah, it very much does. It's only really good against like Liliana of the Veil, basically, because you want to be able to counter their ability to edict you.
Right, but he's already maining a Dryad Arbor. I mean, he's already like leaning in that.
But don't you still want more than one dismember?
Not necessarily.
If you go up on Twisted Images, you can.
Yeah, I would probably cut one of Spell Pierce, Dismember, or Twisted Image for the fourth one. Maybe even move the second Distortion Strike to the side, because that card's not always very good.
It's interesting, because if it was me, I would be moving Vines around. So no. I would cut a Spell Pierce to play the fourth Blossoming Defense, and then I would cut Vines for either more Dismembers or Twisted Images, because I think that's the only way you lose.
So I think the appeal of this is that it lets you play eight of a very good version of that effect.
But how often are your vines what your vines want to be versus what you need them to be?
Well, the fact that it's a modal spell is what makes it so powerful.
So I agree, but like, doesn't Blossoming Defense just do that?
I mean, yeah, but it's important that more of your cards can pump by more than two. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, because the way that you're winning is usually from Become Immense anyway.
Right, often, but if you are Become Immense or you can't win, it's kind of scary. I mean, these cards are especially great, like, I mean, you can just, like, sort of do the, depending on what your opponent is holding up, just, like, the main phase might have pulled Crosso, okay, you try to kill it, okay, make him Hexproof or whatever. And they're great for that kind of stuff, but I think you have to be a little bit wary of having too many things that are only capable of pumping two, because as games drag out, you know, when games go a little bit longer and you're trying to sort of chip shot, it's really valuable to be able to get more than two or three damage in a single attack.
Well, let's move on to our pairings. This week we're doing a modern in our pairing, so pairings break down how, Casey?
So I look at an event, in this case this was just this one modern classic, because it's the only modern event with Kaladesh legal, and you get 6 points for winning it, 5 for second, 4 for top 4, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16. Add up the deck's points and then rank them from high to low.
And we have a tie-in 3rd, 4th, and a tie-in 2nd, 3rd. So we have a tie for Burn, just regular Burn, probably usually Naya Burn.
Yeah.
And a tie for Storm. So let's talk about Burn first. This deck has become a hybrid, basically, of like Zoo and Burn.
In a way, it's mostly just using Wild Mikado as, you know, a lightning bolt that sometimes is two lightning bolts. So usually it's good for at least one attack, sometimes two.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing is, like, because it gets to play Wild Mikado and sometimes other creatures, a lot of times those target's commands have different modes where they wouldn't have had them before.
Sure. You know, it can be like a 5 to 6 damage Atarka's Command.
It's a weird deck that plays both Atarka's Command and Lava Spike, and Atarka's Command has mode somehow in this deck.
Yeah, that's true. It really gives you a lot of multiple angles, and sometimes people just can't beat a Wild Mikado. Sometimes it does 9 damage, and that's just like
too many.
Yeah, it's the game.
That, with that being said, the burn list that took 3rd at this classic was not playing Wild Mikado.
Like I said, it's bad. You shouldn't.
No, for a real thing to think about is that
so this was red white, not playing.
Yeah, so it wasn't green, so it was Boros Burn. So the when you do that, you also are often playing 4 Skull Cracks.
Yeah, and this deck is also playing Flames of the Blood Hand, which I
think I think this is a typical Boros version of the deck.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, this was a deck before Atarka's Command was printed.
Yeah, this was a deck a long, long time ago. I wonder if this
was. You sound leery, but, like, the reason that it plays Flames is because it wants more Boros Charms.
It plays Flames because it's kind of just where you are, right? Like, it's probably a little bit better than Lightning Helix because it does 4 instead of 3.
And yeah, that's what I said. I said it wants more Boros Charms.
Right. And that's the idea. I would assume that this person played Boros for budget reasons rather than choosing it over Naya, because I think it's just worse. But I would be curious to see what Burn players' thoughts on that are.
I also would. I think that right now, if you look at what Burn decks look like outside of this second place deck list, I think, by the way, how did this deck play second and only get 5 points? Or 4 points?
Third.
Is it 6-5? Oh, it took third? That's how it did it.
Mystery solved.
Haha. No, but for real, I think that, like, Burn is in an interesting space where I feel like the deck is figured out, but obviously this is a different version of the deck than what I would play.
Yeah, I wonder, I think I might have played this person at GP Portland several years ago, the modern GP.
This specific person?
Yeah, that name looks really familiar to me. And she was playing Burn then too, Boros Burn. So it could just be love of the sport. I'm not sure. I could be totally wrong, and it could be a totally different person.
Or just, like, just owning this deck, and this is just what gets played. I mean, you know, if you're talking about it being worse than Naya, it's still very similar.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's not really a different deck. It just, I think you're just losing a little bit of percentage points is all.
Well, let's move on to the next issue we have, which is Storm. Taking fourth place, getting 4 points. This deck is unplayable. I actually don't know how this got any points.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, like, sometimes you're just doing it, and if you are, the deck is, could be good, depending on what your matchups are.
Not only is this deck unplayable, but it's not even playing Pyromancer's Ascension, which is what would make this deck playable.
Yeah, this whole operation is kind of peculiar.
Maybe he broke it. Maybe I'm wrong.
He's playing Gifts Ungiven, which feels not so good to me.
So, he did you see his sweet sideboard, though?
Oh.
I did.
Platinum Imperion, and then sweet, does he have Madcap?
Sweet is yeah. The wrong word.
Lost every game one, won every game two and three.
It's a strategy.
So, like, the sideboard of 4 Madcap Experiment, 2 Platinum Imperium, 3 Blood Moon, and then, you know, whatever else you need is, like, a strong interaction. But also, he probably still should be playing. Like, he should still play the best main deck he can.
Yeah, I think the best version of this deck is kind of the Pyromancer's Ascension thing in the Ice deck, where, like, you get to just play a Burn deck rather than needing to Storm. But I certainly have a soft spot in my heart for this deck.
There's literally a grape shot in your wallet.
That's true. They keep
actually,
on
we were at dinner with Wes, Michael, and Danny, and you all pulled out magic cards from your wallet. And yeah. I was like, what the heck?
Wait, what?
Yeah, so we're at IHOP, and Casey talks about how he has a grape shot in his wallet, and he pulls it out. And then Danny and Wes also pull magic cards out from their wallet that they've had sitting there for years.
Oh, you said Michael in there.
Sorry.
Just clarifying that wasn't me.
Oh, just trying to
first of all,
yourself.
I would never have a fucking... I would never have a magic card in my wallet, and I would strongly consider not eating at IHOP.
Also, I agree on both counts. That's not getting edited out. That's the first F-bomb on CCMDG in a while.
It was reflex. I apologize.
I mean, I also hate IHOP that much.
Yeah, it's not.
This had more to do with carrying magic cards in my wallet than IHOP.
So,
but, you know,
my wife wanted pumpkin pancakes, which IHOP had, and that was it.
That was what happened.
That was the end of the story. Are pumpkin pancakes better than Storm right now in Modern?
No, because pumpkin pancakes are stone cold unplayable.
Well, hold on. You can 0-3 a Storm, 0-3 with Storm, and get pumpkin pancakes.
Yeah, that feels really unlucky.
Or way better than what you would normally get with Storm.
I would rather eat pumpkin pancakes than play this deck.
I think this deck is actually bad right now. I think that this deck was once great, and, like, you're playing a shell of a deck, and it's bad.
Yeah. Playing this deck actually just makes me really sad. It could probably be fine. Like, if you really mastered it, you could probably be a fine player, like, with this deck. It just makes me sad because it's not the deck it used to be.
And also because they banned Dragonstorm, or not Dragonstorm, what was the ritual?
Seething Song.
They
banned Seething Song, which didn't even need to be banned. Like, they were just like, stop it.
Well, so at that time, Blue Red Storm was the highest winning percentage deck on Modo by a significant margin.
Right, but it also cost $12 and beat Jund, which was the best deck.
It was beating a lot with Seething Song. That was the first modern deck that I ever played, and that deck was great. But without Seething Song, you're just kind of playing up.
Right, they banned every ritual except for the 2-mana, make 1-mana rituals.
Right. This deck is not...
It's not real.
Yeah, it's not.
You can... So now you admit that you'd rather have IHOP than play this deck.
No, because I don't... I would rather...
Do anything than eat IHOP?
Basically. especially pumpkin pancakes. That just sounds awful.
All right. So next up we have Red Green Breach with 5 points. This is the deck that I just took second at a PPDQ that I played at for fun. The deck was great. I was honestly surprised. I think this deck is the real deal, and that's crazy. This is Volokut from years ago, and it's the real deal. And you need to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's a real deck. It does sometimes fall apart to Thoughtseize, because even though you are playing, you know, several ways to get Titans in your deck, you're not really doing much without your Titan.
Yeah, the version that I played specifically Nahiri and Emrakul, Nahiri being the worst card in my deck. I actually would have won the PPTQ if I had remembered that Through the Breach was an instant.
Sure. Or that you're allowed to sideboard out Nahiri whenever you want to.
I sideboarded out Nahiri a lot. I didn't forget that.
Good, good.
But one thing that to think about is that you can play this deck probably with some amount of 4-drops that win the game by themselves. I know we did a deck tech on this deck on our YouTube channel where I talked about specifically Huntmaster of the Fells. And how, like, this is a great card because it wins the game by itself just on turn 3 when you can cast it early. And that's pretty powerful. And I would expect that some number of these decks have those kind of draws. Where you don't need Primeval Titan. Where, like, you, like, play a Volokut early and then, like, they have to deal with your threat and then they die to Volokut late. Even though you're not always casting Primeval Titan.
Yeah. Well, or you feels like a weird one to me.
Or that it doesn't really matter, right? Because if you have the Volokut in play, you can just play Mountains.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, once you get your Volokuts online, as long as you're not gonna just die right away, you're going to win because lands are good and spells are good. Like, you don't really need a top deck.
Well, everything in your deck is good once you have a Volokut online.
Right. Exactly. Every card in your deck becomes a Lightning Bolt or better.
Yeah. And, you know, there were games that I won at that PPTQ where I had 2 Volokuts in play, and I was like, all right, well, everything is either Wrath for your board or 6 to your face.
Yeah, and that's really powerful.
Yeah. I think this is a real deck, something you should worry about. Let's move on to the next deck, which is also a Volokut deck, and that's Scapeshift. This is specifically Bring to Light Scapeshift, by the way, is the decks that did well. I have played Blinging Delight, I played Rug, I played Green Red, I played basically every Scapeshift deck. The Blinging Delight 4-color version, whether it's black or whether it's white, is the most popular version. And the reason it's the most popular is because of Bring to Light, because of the availability of, like, being able to do whatever you want. I do not like the fact that some of these decks are, like, playing 4 Cryptic Commands as well as Bring to Light. That seems aggressive to me.
Cryptic Command is great and Bring to Light is good, so, you know, I say why not?
Because you can't do both.
I mean, obviously, Daniel Trujillo disagrees with you. I think it's fine. I think you just have to, like, you're just making a decision about, like,
the kind of life you're gonna live?
Right, exactly. What kind of mana base you're gonna play, and it's not gonna be pretty.
Hey guys, hold on just one second.
Michael.
Okay.
Does it sound like he's fighting something?
Yeah.
Like he's going Super Saiyan and, like, fighting an evil villain?
Yeah, also, like, he just started, like, living his life, right? Like, cracked open a beer, started reading a magazine.
All right, sorry about that.
Welcome back.
Yep. Yep, yep.
So, where are you guys at with Scapeshift? I mean, we've said on this podcast before that it's, like, the best deck that nobody talks about in Modern. It is. That's true about it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's... But where does it really land? Is it a top five deck? Like, where does it actually land? It's number three or number four here, but, like... Or number two or three, actually. Where does it actually land for you as a Modern deck?
I think it's very good. It's just a deck that... you can run into trouble with because your bad matchups can be really, really bad. And there are times where you're just not getting it done. Playing Bring Delight addresses the biggest weakness of the deck, which was that you sometimes just didn't draw Scapeshifts. So, like, doubling your number of Scapeshifts in your deck is really powerful.
Yeah, especially this guy. He played even a Snapcaster Mage, and I would even play two in this deck.
That makes sense. My biggest issue with Scapeshifts specifically is just that it feels very much like a deck that you either just like how it plays or you don't.
It's actually not very interesting. I have a very different opinion of Scapeshift. I think that it is the best control deck in Modern. I think Casey also feels that way.
Yeah, only because otherwise control decks in Modern are pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And this deck is actually viable.
Yeah.
So it's the best one by default.
But also, this list by Daniel is actually playing no Lightning Bolts.
Yeah, which I would assume that he lost to Infect in the semifinals there.
Yeah, because he took 8th and Infect won.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just because I don't know how you could ever beat Infect with this deck, this particular list.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot for... I mean, he has Sudden Shock.
And Malira. That's like a plan.
Well... better than actually nothing.
I think that the rug base of this deck is very good, and it's kind of about what you want to see after that.
Yeah, you have quite a bit of flexibility in how you build this deck, which is nice.
Yeah,
you can.
I would build this. I would obviously build this deck different. I have versions of this deck that play both white and black. I like Slaughter Games post board rather than main deck Supreme Verdict, so I just play the Damnation. And in my versions, I have about one Izzet Charm and one, and you know, two less Cryptic Command, and I'm playing three Lightning Bolt usually. I don't know the reason to play Anticipate over Worldly Council. They're basically
cowardice.
Right?
yeah, you'll almost always, it'll never be worse than Anticipate and can sometimes be better.
Yeah, so I don't know why he's playing Anticipate. But other than that, I really like this deck list. I like the one Hunting Wilds. I like the main deck Wrath. And then the other thing that I noticed, he's only playing one Anger in his 75, which is something that I would be against. He's also playing one more land than I typically do in 26 over 25. But other than that, I think that he's doing most of the things that I would typically do, which if you ask listeners of the podcast and people in Utah, even people who aren't listeners of the podcast, the most questions I get are like, Spencer, what's your current Scapeshift list? I have one, but like...
Do you think that the Ask Me About My Scapeshift List t-shirt factors into that at all?
I don't have one of those.
No, you have 7.
I have none of those. There are a subsect of players in Utah that literally don't know my name and call me Scapeshift Guy, which is weird to me.
Yeah, that does seem weird. Actually, the
I'm glad I don't get called Scapeshift Guy. I mean, that would be distressing.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't respond to that. the weird thing about this deck is that he's not playing anything in white other than Supreme Verdict.
Yeah, so he's not even playing the sideboard cards in white, right?
Yeah, he's playing...
He's playing Leyline, but, like, he still only has...
You're not on the cast Leyline plan.
Yeah, you're playing one Plains...
One Hollowed Fountain.
One Hollowed Fountain? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I'm a Prairie Stream kind of guy, but I can see the Hollowed Fountain.
So, I played green-red Breach with Ley Lines than I could cast Ley Lines. I don't know. I don't know what's right here. I do think Scapeshift in some capacity is better than the other decks we talked about. But I do think the next deck is currently the best deck in Modern, and I think it will stay that way for a little while. And that's Infect coming with, was it 15 or 13 points? 13 points. So we obviously gave Card of the Week to Blossoming Defense for the reason that, like, what are they doing? They gave us Blossoming Defense, and they gave us Become Immense in the last year, or year and a half, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I like that they're not afraid to experiment, but this deck is looking pretty powerful.
It went from maybe playable to tier one to now probably the best deck. Yeah. Really quickly.
Yeah, it's probably going to get Become Immense banned.
Oh, Become Immense is going to get banned.
Like,
it doesn't... Just go for the unban other things plan. That sounds so much better.
I think both will probably happen. But Wizards has been pretty good about unbanning things. They don't do it in the time frame that we want.
Yeah, but I mean, we talked about two Volica decks in this Power Rankings, right? And that card used to be banned.
Yeah, and like Wild Nacaudal was in one of these decks usually. That card was unbanned.
Right.
I think that more unbannings will happen, and like a balance will happen, but Infect is the best deck in Modern right now. It's good against Tron, it's good against... I mean, with the new additions, it's good against probably Jund, which we'll find out this week on my video series with Matt. You can go to youtube.com, you know, search for Constructive Criticism, see the YouTube video that I will be doing with Matt this week. It will be Jund versus Infect to see kind of like, how does this deck play out now that you have Blossoming Defense? But I would expect it to be in Infect's favor, which is something that Casey and I have talked about today.
Yeah, which is, it's not something that used to be in Infect's favor. So the fact that it, I think that on paper it should be, where kind of you're making Liliana of the Veil their only really good card against you. And even that card can fall pretty short.
Michael?
I mean, there are just so many hexproof cards at this point. Like, what, you're fighting through four Vines and at least three Blossoming Defenses, and...
And that's only the deck that won. There were decks in this top 32 that played four Blossoming Defense.
Sure. So I mean, so you're fighting through a ton of this stuff, and I mean, the thing with Infect is like, you can if you're a deck with a lot of cards that are good against it, you can take a game, right? You can take a game frequently, but it's like every time anything goes wrong, okay, your lands don't sequence well, you miss a land drop, you tap out for a removal spell or something, and just anytime anything goes wrong, you just die. And that's not true of very many decks where, like, in the first three or four turns of the game, if anything goes wrong for you, you just die. And then the flip side is that you'll frequently actually live through those first three or four turns, and then, you know, miss top decking a Lightning Bolt for two turns and get killed by an Inkwoth Nexus or whatever.
Yeah. The fact that it's a deck that can top deck pretty well because the deck is very redundant, and like you can just, you know, draw pump spell, Blighted Agent, untap, draw another spell, kill them. Or the fact that you can win on turn two, like against an underprepared opponent. Like you play a Glistener Elf, they have to play a Serum Visions because that's their only choice for turn one, and then they're just dead. Or they don't play anything and they're just dead. Like that's a really powerful mechanic to have in your deck.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, it's like, it just feels like a lot more has to go right for the person playing against Infect than with Infect.
So what would you guys play in Modern and why, Michael?
I would play Infect because I already like that deck and now we got another great pump spell.
Casey?
Same. Infect was already one of the decks that I liked a lot in Modern. And I think that this kind of takes away the biggest reason not to play it.
Yeah, I actually don't even like Infect, and I would play Infect. I think that this is a trend you're going to see, and I think that Become Immense will become banned. And until that happens, I see no reason not to play the deck. I think that it shored up some of its bad matchups.
Yeah, really powerful.
All right, let's go on to our training guides this week. We're going to talk about aggro versus tempo. Casey, what is aggro and what is tempo?
So aggro is playing a deck that wants to just end the game as quickly as possible, ideally. You're playing a deck that is typically poorly suited for long games, and you want to be able to just cash in all of your spells to kill your opponent as quickly as possible before they can stabilize. Where tempo is trying to keep your opponent trapped in playing a lot of really good early game cards and trying to trap your opponent in the early game through a removal, through mana denial, through whatever. There's a lot of different ways to achieve tempo, but just trying to keep both players trapped in the early game and play the best early game cards that exist.
Okay. So, Casey, you actually wrote the show this week. This isn't one of my weeks to write the show. And the first thing you wrote down is, where do your bolts go? So, clearly, Bolt being this super aggressive mid-range card, you also believe it belongs in a tempo deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Delver decks, even, some versions of Zoo are definitely tempo decks, because your Bolts, you would never cast a Bolt turn one to your opponent's face in a tempo deck. But in an aggro deck, if you don't have another one drop, that's where your Bolt goes. That's what it's for.
I mean, Lava Spike literally exists as a card that sees play in Modern.
Right, exactly. And
I think that's an important difference here, right? Like, these are functionally the same cards in the same deck, right? Like, in my burn deck, if my hand is Bolt, 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 Goblin, whatever.
Guide?
Goblin, yeah, guide. Sounds like you're doing it.
Yeah.
The quad Bolt draw.
Yeah, hold on, but is there any chance your Bolts aren't going face there?
No, exactly, because that's what it does in your deck. You're playing an extremely aggressive deck, and your Bolts go face.
Yet, when I play Delver, what happens to my Bolts?
Well, you need them to kill any blockers that your opponent puts in front of you, because
they become modal spells.
Exactly. It's primarily a cheap removal spell that if your opponent, they go to 6 or whatever, you attack them with your Delver, right. They go to 3, you Bolt them. The Bolts are good for the last 3 points, where if you're playing an aggressive deck, sometimes the Bolts are good for the first 3 points. So it's just kind of a philosophy in how you're using your Bolts or similar cards.
About
density. Go ahead, Michael. Of those cards, typically. Like, a lot of the time, just looking at a deck, you can get a feel sort of for, if a deck is playing like 10 to 15, burn type spells, they're just going to be going face a lot more often, right? I mean, it's a good indicator that you're looking to use them aggressively.
Yeah, that certainly can be true. I think that there are definitely decks that were like mono red decks that were definitely tempo decks, but used their shocks and their Bolts and their incinerates and their whatever as this type of modal spell, where its primary job was to clear things out of the way of your Jackal Pups and your Ball Lightnings or whatever, and secondarily, to just finish your opponent off.
Something that I think about when I think about this is, I played a lot of Jund and Scapeshift, right? And in those decks, my Bolts are removal spells. Like, sometimes my Bolts and Jund will finish them off, and some very rare times, this double Bolt draw that I have actually ends the game with my Scapeshift draw. Or my Bolt will hit them to put them at 18 so my Scapeshift can resolve and kill them.
Right.
But when I think about, some of my favorite, secretly, I don't actually know if that's about that be the secret, but blue-green is my favorite color combination. And there was a Miracle-Gro deck in Standard with Delver that played Prion Dryad, Delver, Snapcaster, Mutagenic Growth, Gitaxian Probe.
Gutshot, yeah, it was just trying to play.
Yeah, it was a really fun deck.
Yeah, it was a deck that would have played Grapeshot if it could get away with it.
Yeah.
Because it cast so many spells.
It was a really fun deck, and when you look at that deck, you're like, what are you doing, Spencer? And it's like, no, these Vapor Snags are basically removal spells. And right. That's kind of the idea that you get to. And here's the next step in this, is this linear versus interactive. In a linear deck, I actually think this is important to think about. We talked about two different styles of Volca decks, right? We talked about Red-Green Breach and Scapeshift. One of those is an interactive deck, and one of those is a
You're on rails, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that this happens very often in aggro versus tempo, right? Whereas there's one mono red deck that plays one drop, two drop, three drop, it kills you, and there's another mono red deck that plays one drop, attack you, kill your guy, attack you, kill your guy, attack you. they're different decks.
Yeah, very much so. Kind of people in the terms kind of become interchangeable. People will call them both mono red or red deck wins. But for me, like, RDW is definitely something that's more associated with tempo decks, because that's where the name came from. Is it was decks where, yeah, you were just trying to clear out the way of your aggressive creatures, and it was certainly a deck that was trying to kill people, but it wasn't, so, you know, it wasn't a slow deck by any stretch, but it wasn't just, I'm going to attack, and you're going to be dead.
So, it's actually interesting, because, like, in my time in playing Magic, and it was right before you came in, was the Delver era.
Yeah.
And that was the most interactive tempo deck probably of all time. It's actually funny, Cobblade was actually a tempo deck. People call it a control deck, but, like, you played Squadron Hawk.
Yeah, it was, like, aggro control. Had like a, right. You had a lot of modes in Cobblade, right? Where yeah. You could take a lot of rolls.
But it was a tempo deck. At the end of the day, that's what you were doing.
Sure.
You were playing a Squadron Hawk, getting some Squadron Hawks, mana leaking your play, playing a Squadron Hawk, attacking, counterspelling your thing, playing a
sword.
Sword, exactly. Equipping the sword, attacking, untapping your lands, playing a mana leak. It was a tempo deck.
For sure.
And the thing is like, you had these years of Cobblade, Delver, and it was, what is happening to Magic? But at the end of the day, like,
getting awesome.
getting awesome. At the end of those days, like, at the same time, you had these great mono-red decks, too. And were these mono-red decks linear? No, I actually think those mono-red decks were also tempo decks.
Yeah, definitely. The Stromkirk Noble mono-red deck that was kind of the...
That won the first SEG at Innistrad.
Yeah. That was definitely a tempo deck.
Yeah.
You know, you were using your Searing Spears to kill their guys. You weren't trying to burn them out just because Stromkirk Noble was going to get there on its own, and Hellrider was going to finish the job.
At the same time, do you remember the big aggro deck with, like, Hellrider, Stormbreath Dragon, Falconwrath Aristocrat?
Oh, yeah, with Thundermaw Hellkite, you mean?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
deck was, like, super aggro.
Yeah, exactly. It was
Of its burn spells were to kill your little blockers to getting your Hellriders.
Yeah, or even just ignore them because the Hellrider was going to do so much damage just by attacking once that, you know, whatever.
That you just use that incinerate to hit their face. And I think that this is something that people need to understand. We did a podcast a long time ago, and probably one that we'll do again, about understanding your role. And in Constructed, it seems so easy, right? It seems so easy to understand that, like, I'm playing these subset of cards, so I'm the aggro deck. But the thing is like, when you are the tempo deck, you're actually favored against aggro decks.
Yeah, because you get to be a control deck that's only a little bit bigger than them. You get to disrupt their game plan, make their cards look really ineffective.
Yeah, it's completely different than, like, green-white aggro versus mono-red aggro, where, like, green-white's favored right. because, like...
Whatever. How could you ever win?
Yeah, how could you ever beat this 4-4? But, like, in this blue-white aggro deck that's, like, I'm blue-white aggro, also, like, your Stromkirk Noble doesn't matter.
Right. Oh, okay, you got it to a 2-2. Okay, you're attacking again. Put it on top of your deck, Azorius Charm. Like, there's a lot of different ways that you could build this type of deck where it just makes the aggro deck's cards feel so irrelevant.
So, I think about when you're looking at, like, aggro against tempo and sort of where the comparisons are, right? I feel like in tempo decks, you're often trying to make your opponent... You're trying to make the mana your opponent has spent, like, not work in the way that they'd hoped it would.
Kind of irrelevant, right?
Like,
right?
They play a Stromkirk Noble, right? And you're like, or, I mean, obviously these aren't in the format of the same thing, but when you, like, Reflector Mage something, right? You're not, like, putting them on a quick clock, but what you're trying to do is sort of not let
making
them
their cards
there.
Not matter.
Actually, I think the Reflector Mage is a good example of this, right? Like, when we saw Reflector Mage spoiled, I actually did a podcast with Drew Walden on Limited Time Only where he said, I don't know if this card is good in Limited, but I think this is an all-star in Constructed. And I was like, oh man, I feel the exact opposite way. What you don't realize is, like, alright, so here's what I'm going to do. You're going to play your 4-drop. I'm going to play my Reflector Mage. I'm going to bounce your 4-drop. And now you don't really have a turn.
Right. Yeah,
because what you want to play is that 4-drop, but instead you're stuck playing the stupid 2-drop that doesn't matter. Because we've already outclassed this in this game of Constructed Magic.
and God forbid, it's there are multiple reflector mages. I mean, right? That's where it really starts. Or, you know, then your 4-drop the next turn gets Odetize commanded or whatever, right? But, I mean, when you get these cards where they just invalidate entire turns of the game and they scale well, that's when you really start running into tempo decks that are powerful.
Yeah, just, like, exactly. It just, you're trying to, it doesn't matter how many cards your opponent has or even what their life total is, because it just, what they're doing just isn't, doesn't matter. You make your deck, you're making your deck as agnostic to what your opponent's deck is as possible.
So, Casey, you actually put an interesting thing in here that I don't quite understand, but you put in Rugging Grixis Delver versus UR Delver.
Yeah, because even though they play a lot of the similar cards, you know, they're both playing Daze and Force of Will and, like, a lot of the cantrips, with Blue-Red Delver, you're definitely, it's a change in the tone of your deck quite a bit by deciding to put things like Price of Progress. You know, that's a deck, that's a card that doesn't do anything to interact with your opponent, it just kills them. Which, you know, is certainly a powerful effect, but because of you've made that change in philosophy, at that point your Lightning Bolts have, you know, gone the other way, where a lot of times with Blue-Red Delver, you are casting the turn one Lightning Bolt if you don't have a Delver, because that's what it's for now. We're into a different type of deck. And even though they're both Delver decks, they function a lot differently.
It's actually funny, because, like, Grixis to me is, like, this super interactive deck, whereas the interactions in Rug Delver in Legacy is, like, what you did didn't matter this game, which is kind of similar to an aggro deck.
Well, I think that Rug Delver is, like, the archetypal tempo deck to me, because you're making it, it just doesn't matter what the cards are, but you're stopping them every step of the way.
So, but that's true. Maybe, you know, I think you're actually right, because when I think of it, it's like kind of like the classic red deck wins. It's like one drop, kill your guy,
get in
three for drop, attack.
Yeah.
You know, whatever your 4-drop is, play two hasty guys, just classic.
Yeah, like, you're definitely taking the aggressive approach, but your aggressive approach isn't blazing fast, but you're making your opponent's deck feel so irrelevant that it makes
this... Is that only true of tempo, or can that also be true of aggro, where, like, their 5-drops didn't matter?
So, in aggro, I think it's a little bit different, because you're trying to kill them before they can play their cards, right? Where in tempo, you're trying to make their cards not matter. So either way, they don't matter, I guess, but it functions a little bit differently. Like in an aggro deck, a lot of times, like if you've got two 2/2s and they've got a 3/3, you're just going to attack because giving up the guy is worth getting in the 2 damage. Where in a tempo deck, that's oftentimes not going to be effective. You're going to find some way to get around it rather than just trying to plow through it.
Michael, what are your thoughts on this?
I think that's kind of true. So looking at like Rug versus Blue-Red especially, I get the feeling that, like, Rug, what you're trying to do is essentially play a resource denial game and then efficiently use all of your mana, whereas in the Blue-Red deck, you're sort of trying to... You're sort of taking advantage of the fact that there aren't many pure aggro decks in Legacy, and you're sort of trying to, like, chip shot them down into range. I mean, you just... The nature of the format is that you still have to play some reactive cards.
So this is actually interesting. This is actually interesting to me in the specific reasons of Rug. When I look at a Rug deck, I think of like this Tarmogoyf Nidbol Mongoose deck. That it's like, I'm going to maximize my mana and then deny you of mana.
Right.
Which is a form of tempo, I guess.
Right, because you're trying to... I think
of that as the tempo deck. Like the whole, the stifle kind of stuff where...
So specifically the definition of tempo is... spend less mana than your opponent and make your mana more matter more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to define tempo, but I think that's one of the core philosophies for sure. But that deck does the best job of what I talked about at the beginning of the training grounds, which is keeping your opponent in the early game and having a better early game deck than your opponent.
Tarmogoyf right, is the best 2-mana creature. Like, right, but if your opponent just plays like 4 or 5 lands, it can be very hard to win sometimes.
Yeah, very true, right. Because yeah. That means they're going to get to the stuff that outclasses you. Jace the Mind Sculptor outclasses everything in Rug Delver by a huge margin. The way you're beating that card is by not playing against it, by wastelanding and stifling them out of the game.
Well, and the Wasteland stifle dichotomy is brutal. It really is, right? Because you're trying to...
So, hold on. For those who don't know, what is a dichotomy?
So, the dichotomy you're getting here, like, Wasteland and Stifle are... They're giving sort of tension against each other, because you have all these decks that are playing a bunch of fetch lands, and you want to fetch basics, but you're not always sure exactly which basics you need. So ideally, you'd like to wait, but you're also playing against a deck that's playing Stifle, so you're priced into not immediately cracking for dual lands. So you're either holding up these fetch lands to try to play around Wasteland and giving yourself some percentage chance at being stifled, or you're cracking them really aggressively, really early for suboptimal lands and potentially limiting the spells you can cast in doing so. And like it sort of gives you these two choices, but neither tend to work
one
out
is,
all that well.
They're, exactly. They're only correct in the right sequence.
Right. It just presents really challenging choices.
Right, you're giving your opponent kind of a prisoner's dilemma where that neither of their choices are right.
It's like the for those who don't play Legacy, because a lot of our listeners don't, it's kind of similar to what you were facing against maybe Collected Company last season.
Sure.
Where it's like, so I do this because this is better against this, but also if they have a Collected Company and they hit this, then it doesn't matter what I do. That's kind of the similar situation that this deck is putting you in.
The difference is that this is happening from turn one basically every game
you ever play. Yeah, but it's a different format, right? Where it's a similar situation, right? Like you have to make this decision, but it's kind of like a loser's dilemma.
Definitely. Just in communicating how frustrating it can be to play against this deck.
Yeah. Where
you feel like there's just no matter, it's like you're basically making 50-50 calls in the dark and praying you were right.
I do want to say that I think that you are incorrect for playing Rug Delver right now, by the way. I think that Grixis is just better. But I think that Grixis can have the same kind of game as Rug Delver still.
It can, and that's why I sort of lumped them in on the same side of this. Because I think that they're functionally the same deck in terms of...
Just Grixis is better right now.
Yeah, it's just a little bit better of a deck. It's maybe a little bit more... Has more elements of a control deck.
It's an honest deck, more so than Rug is.
Right, where Rug Delver, you're trying to play the most one-sided games of Magic possible.
Right. So, next up we have Naya Zoo versus Naya Burn. What does this mean? They're the same deck, right?
I don't think so. And I think it's because of cards like Path to Exile. So in Burn, you're often, in Naya Burn, you do play Path to Exile, usually out of your sideboard, because it's sort of just the cost of doing business. It's really hard to race at Tarmogoyf with Burn. Where in Zoo, it's actually part of the strategy. The sort of core philosophy of Zoo decks is mana efficiency, playing the best card at every spot on the curve. And you're just trying to, even though it's a very aggressive deck, it's trying to keep things clear and out of their way. Killing your opponent's creatures is, having access to good removal is one of the main, most important things about playing a traditional Zoo deck. So even though the lines do blur on this deck quite a bit, I think the way that the decks do play are very, very different from one another.
That makes sense to me. So you think this has to do some with just like creature count in terms?
Yeah, it can be creature count in a big way, and it's also deck building philosophy. Like you need to know going into how exactly you're going to build your deck. Whether you're going to be planning on interacting with your opponent's creatures, or if you're trying to race in every matchup, whether or not you think that your Tarmogoyf is going to hold the board, or if it's better to, you know, play Eidolon of the Great Revel to just try to kill your opponent dead as quickly as possible.
But how often does that Eidolon also interact with your game plan?
A lot. If you are playing a matchup where you have to race, Eidolon can be disastrous for either player.
So, the next thing that we have up here is kind of what we talked about earlier, which is Red Deck Wins versus Sly. Aren't those the same deck?
And I think that the terms sometimes get jumbled, but I don't think so. So, Sly, you know, you'll play a burn spell once in a while, but you're more trying to make either just attack through your opponent's creatures, or what was the card you played in Boss Sly that made creatures unable to block?
I actually think this is an important note. Red Deck Wins is the deck that won Pro Tour Origins, whereas Sly is the deck that won Pro Tour Dragons. They are so different of red decks, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. The decks play night and day, and it's because Red Deck Wins is a very aggressive take on a tempo deck, where Sly is a very aggressive deck on the most aggressive deck you can build.
Yeah, whereas like you're like, all right, I'm gonna Foundry Street you, and then Foundry Street, and then Goblin, whatever, you know, Rebel Holding Master, Outburst, yeah. whatever it is that's playing two creatures, attack you. I'm gonna kill my own creature to deal you six.
Right, because it's
just and now right. now good luck. Whereas Red Deck Wins is like, I'm gonna play this. It's actually crazy to think that like. Abbot of Carol Keep was like the breaking point of this deck because it's like, I'm going to Abbot on turn 5 so that I can hit my burn spell to kill your guy to do you 7. Which is like, wait, when did you do that?
Well, yeah. That and Searing Blood. Searing
All
Blood
of it.
Was
All of it together,
Searing
right
Blood
there.
Was my
it was
thing
a
of my
tempo
nightmares
deck.
From that deck.
Yeah, for
the card
Searing
was
Blood
so
was
good.
Such a savage beating.
It was so good it made Jace unplayable.
It made
That's
a lot of things feel unplayable.
It was unplayable in that format. Jace didn't like put any copies in like the top.
That's not true. Like the best deck in that format was literally a 4-color Jace deck that only played blue for Jace.
That wasn't until Zendikar.
That wasn't until that wasn't until rotation.
Oh, that's right. That was right after
my. That was after Searing Blaze.
It was literally right after my Pro Tour.
Searing Blood rotated.
Yeah, you're right.
Because Searing Blood was so bad. I mean, I remember the decks I was playing were like various stuff with Jace.
Yeah,
like
I actually remember this because we tested Jace for the Pro Tour and it was like, oh, this card can't beat this. So I actually remember this.
Yeah, actually playing this is a death sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just like it gets killed and you take 3. It was right, really powerful.
That's an insane aggro tempo card, right? Because you get to kill a creature and dome them. It's
right, it did
but
both.
It's a tempo spell, right?
Right, you're... It's a removal spell first and foremost. So if your opponent's not playing creatures, it's actually an uncastable card.
But wait, isn't that an aggro spell?
No, because it's fundamentally an interactive spell that just has an insane amount of splash damage.
It's right. It's just the best kind of interactive spell, the kind of interactive spell that casually kills your opponent at the same time.
So what makes a deck a Sly deck versus a red deck, Michael?
I think about, like, interest in interacting with the board. Like, when you're looking at these decks that are playing, like, Foundry Street Denizen and stuff like that, the goal is basically to ideally win the die roll. You know, play one of these one or two drops that can get in for a lot of damage, and then just make your opponent unable to spend enough mana, basically. Like, if the game is just over quickly enough, your opponent is just not going to be able to cast enough spells. Is basically the goal. Whereas when you're playing the red deck wins style deck,
it doesn't
it's not
matter
about ending
how many
the game quickly.
Yeah.
It's about answering them efficiently and then being able to finish them off with a couple of burn spells.
Yeah, it's about this whole thing where you do what you're gonna do, but like hopefully I have enough reach to get over that point.
Right, but having played against like the Sly style decks, right, if they go like Foundry Street into two things into Hordling Outburst, you're now like, you've already taken, you know, 4 damage or whatever, 5 damage, 3 damage, I guess, from this Foundry Street Denizen, and then you're trading with it, and it's a card they spent 1 mana
and
on.
And you took 2 additional damage from whatever else they played.
Right, and now they have like 5 1-1s, and you're just never going to be able to block effectively.
Yeah, but like, then if you play an Infest, if you play an Infest there, the game is basically over.
Sure. Well, that, I mean, traditionally, that's why these decks have always been great in game one and kind of sketchy in sideboard games.
Right. Which against red deck wins, a lot of times your Wrath might only get 1 or 2 creatures.
And then they suddenly just play a hasty guy and then burn you out.
Exactly. It's a deck that just fundamentally plays differently.
So, I think we learned a lot here. So, if there's anything that I would learn here, it's like, what do your spells do and what is their role in the games? Is your deck an aggro deck, or are you secretly a tempo deck and you don't realize it? And also, what is tempo doing? Are you playing the aggro game in certain matchups and the control game in others? I think that's the benefit of tempo and something you need to think about. Tembo is going to be favored against the aggro deck because they're a little bit bigger and they're more interactive. That's something to remember, like, even when you think about something like Searing Blood or, you know, Searing Blaze even. Like, what is happening here? Something to remember. So, that's it for this week. Let's move on to our Patreon goal. So this, don't forget that you can become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Right now, I think the next goal, I'm literally looking around the room. As you can see, there's a little bit of different in recording this week. That's a little bit different, but future weeks, I think we're going to get headsets. Make Casey's life and Michael's life a little bit better.
Yeah, headsets are great, and it would also allow us to
do what we want to do.
Right, which is have more of a round table podcast instead of a long table podcast. And, you know, good riddance to the long table.
I know what you're saying, but I don't know that they know what you're saying.
So we sit side by side right now along a long table, and it makes, like, having eye contact with one another.
Conversations are different, right?
Right, exactly. Where, like, I'm, like, weaving in and out, like, around Spencer's head if I'm talking to Michael.
And I move a lot, so he has to literally weave in out of my head.
Yeah.
It's hurting our necks.
Right. Where if we get to sit around a round table, sort of the way the podcast started, it lets the podcast take a much more conversational tone, which is something that we'd like to get back to.
Yeah. So patreon.com/ccmtg, starting at $1, anything you can do is appreciated. You can also go to constructivecriticism.com. There's a donate button for PayPal right on the homepage. You can donate any amount you see fit, and we really appreciate it. Let's talk about joining the conversation. You can go to Twitter and tweet hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we will see it and we will respond. It hasn't been very active since we stopped doing it on the podcast. We want to reserve that right for the patrons of the show. I got asked specifically, hey, why did you end hashtag would that be good? The reason is because, like, the patrons of the show deserve it. Like, if they want to ask a question, they deserve to ask it. And we're still going to respond to your questions, and I still want that to be a conversation between everyone on Twitter. But I can't dedicate that slot of the show and the patron participation.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that, you know, you will still be involved in answering it, but it's not something that is...
And some weeks it took up, like, 20 minutes. Some weeks it took up 20 seconds.
Yeah, it was hard to count on and like that, like, making our show too long.
Yeah.
So it was just something that, unfortunately, had to go from the show.
But we still want it.
Exactly.
So hashtag would that be good, our Twitter outreach program. Tweet with hashtag would that be good, and you will hear from us. Reddit. So I hate Reddit. Everybody knows I hate Reddit, but doggone it. People want a Reddit subreddit, and so if you go to patreon.com/r/ccmtg, you can join the subreddit.
You should actually go to reddit.com, patreon.com for that.
Did I say that?
You did.
Fun fact.
It sounds great. I mean, you can
try. I hate Reddit that much.
You can try. It just probably won't work that well.
Right. I mean, do your best.
It's not a website, so don't do that. No, I think that, like, Reddit does something great. I just don't like it, but I know that, like, Casey, you use Reddit every day.
That's true. I think that the Magic subreddits are...
So how do we make Magic subreddits great again?
Or for the first time? I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's an implication I'm not willing to take on.
So join the subreddit at reddit.com/r/ccmtg, and let's try and make Reddit great. For the first time.
Yeah.
Not again. Facebook group. This actually is a great place. I find our Facebook group to be legitimately amazing.
Yeah, I think it's very good at getting the community talking. You know, not everybody has a Twitter, but almost everybody has a Facebook, and it's easier for people to follow along. You can post full deck lists and have real conversations there.
Yeah, so, you know, just ask, join the Constructive Criticism Facebook group. There was somebody that tried to join it, so... I've been approving more people lately, just thinking, like, the best of people. And more, like, Donald Trump lovers have posted their Donald Trump love, and people have messaged me, hey, like, Spencer, don't do this. I don't want to see this. More and more Hillary lovers have also done that. You know, whatever your political stance is, this is not a place for that. I don't care what it is. I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a liberal, a conservative, a socialist, a than a libertarian, this is not a place for your political stances.
Yeah.
Well, Spencer, I mean, if you say that, but the proletariat will rise again.
But if you do have a great deal on sunglasses, like we're always...
That's also not a great place for it.
All ears.
So here's the thing. If I think that you're not a real person and that you're just going to use my Facebook group to, like, try and clickbait people into voting for whoever you want them to vote for, I'm going to message you and I'm going to ask you what you love about the podcast. Tell me what you love about it and you can get added. But if you don't, you're not getting added. That being said, it is a great place to talk about magic. I think the Facebook group that we have created is specifically better than Reddit because it's not anyone can do it. And I think that, like, we have real conversations. If there's anything I've noticed from this group, it's that, like, I actually, as the host of this podcast, learn something for sometimes. Where I don't think that's true of other Facebook groups that I'm in.
Yeah, it's actually the only magic Facebook group that I am in.
That you, and you're in it because you like it.
Right. And it's for a reason. It's the best one that I've ever been a part of. People are respectful and the conversations are meaningful. I think it's a great place to go and just talk about ideas you have in magic.
Yeah. Even if you get 7 comments, like, there are some groups where you get 23 comments and none of them matter. So.
Right. That's yeah. True. You can there. Talk about your standard deck and somebody will derail the conversation by, like, saying, oh, I like this card in your deck for my commander deck. And then that's what
and
the
then
thread is about
that's
now.
What the, yeah. Suddenly the deck is about a commander deck. I completely agree. You can also join the clan by messaging me at Spencer, they're doing dev on MDGO. I'd be happy to add you to the clan. We'd love to add new members, and hopefully one day we have some benefits for that. You can also check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at OasisGamesSLZ.com, MTGOasis.com, and OasisCCG.com. They're a great place to buy Magic cards, and I would recommend them to anyone. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood, and 15% off of your first order by using code CCMTG at checkout. It's a great place to buy cards. This podcast wouldn't exist without them, and they mean the world to us. Casey, what did you learn this week?
I learned... I think it just the conversation helped me really... Especially writing the show helped me flesh out my ideas about tempo and what it means a bit. I mean, I had a good idea, obviously, because I wrote it, but I just having, like, being able to really put it into words helped me, I think, in terms of trying to build these types of decks.
That's actually something that I feel often doing the podcast is, like, the concepts that we talk about. For example, the ramp versus big mana podcast, I was like, it was this podcast where you and I didn't agree with Michael, but I learned a lot from it.
Right, because we actually had a really good conversation about
Tron, sort of, specifically.
Yeah, which I don't know that anybody's ever had a good conversation about Tron before. So like, that was groundbreaking.
But, it's hard to have a good conversation when you don't have a soul, you know?
Yeah, but I think that, like, doing this show, and this is something that Quentin often said while he did the show, is the show makes you better at Magic. Because you have to articulate the things that you're thinking. And
I agree,
thought processes.
Yeah.
Definitely. You sort of... You get all these things where you think you understand why things are the way they are, but really you've just played enough that sort of how things work get beat into your head. And I think trying to, like, extract why this is happening... why these decks want to do this, what you're... It actually, ideally at least, helps you learn a little bit about what's going on when people are putting these decks together.
Yeah, I completely agree. Michael, what did you learn this week on this week's podcast?
Well, first of all, I learned how much we all like Infect right now, which when Spencer is recommending playing Infect, it's time to play Infect. I was really interested in the thought of, like, where I am interested in using my removal spells as being a gauge of what kind of deck I am. And that ultimately makes sense because a lot of the time you'll end up with, it's hard, like, this is just true a lot of the time, but it's harder for, like, blue-white or whatever to be an aggro deck versus a tempo deck. And thinking about that more, I can't help but think that's because some of your removal options are just limited to creatures only, right? You don't get, like, burn spells and that kind of stuff, and it just pushes you more in a tempo-y direction.
Yeah, completely understand that. So, thank you, everybody, for listening this week. If you have any comments, please leave them. We're going to post this on YouTube, constructivecriticism.com, mtgoasis.com, if that ever exists again. But whatever you're listening to this podcast, please subscribe. Leave a review, and we appreciate everybody that's listening, and we'll see you guys all next... Oh, wow. I actually don't know what we're doing next week, as you guys will both be in Hawaii during the podcast. If you guys want to podcast after day one of the Pro Tour, I'm totally down. It's up to you guys.
Probably not. That sounds like I will be very drained and not really that interested in podcasting.
I will have to find some hosts for next week. We will find out if we even have a podcast next week, but I wish you guys the best of luck. Like, I hope you don't do what I do. Don't just play a deck because it's safe. Play a deck that you think will win the Pro Tour. That's my advice to you. I think I could have played blue-black or teamer at that Pro Tour, and I didn't because they weren't safe. And I think that I would advise you to do the opposite of that, because I think that we've done enough limited testing in this format for you to do pretty well limited. And it's up to you to, like, do the best in Constructed that you can do. So good luck to both you and Michael and Danny. And Drew, who also is a member of this family, and I hope he also does well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Spencer. It's appreciated.
I love you guys. We'll see you guys all next week. And don't forget that if you are a patron of the show on the 21st of October, we're doing a patron-only stream where we'll answer questions, talk about our Pro Tour testing, talk about anything you guys want, answer any questions. Patrons only on October 21st, I believe. Is that the date that we picked?
Yeah, that's a week from Friday, right?
Yeah.
Sounds correct. So yeah. Stay tuned. We'll ship you guys the link. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you guys all next time.
Yep.
Yeah. Magic.